Today is the 21st of January, 2018. We're into our fourth year of doing an archival oral history for the West Dubuque School District. This morning, we're in Warner Robins, Georgia, visiting with our friends, former residents of Iowa, Vince and Vicki Smith. And Vince has had quite a background in education, including some experiences where he was an instructor in the West Dubuque District in the 70s. But as we usually do, Vince, can we go back to maybe some of your early memories from your upbringing? You're from Chicago.
Born and raised in Chicago on the South Side, and it was a good place to grow up. A lot of things that I could do with my friends that are difficult to do today. For example, I was a frequent visitor to Comiskey Park to watch the White Sox play. And it was easy to get from my home to Comiskey Park via public transportation, where today it might not be nearly as safe to use the same means of public transportation that I used at that time. And, of course, the downtown area was just unbelievable to see, especially at Christmas time. So it was a good place to grow up. But when I was ready to go to college, I really did want to go away. I wanted to leave home, and I liked what I found in Dubuque, Iowa. I attended Loras College, and it was at Loras that I really became acquainted with the Western Dubuque District.
Maybe backing up a little bit, if I could, what are some of your memories of your childhood education in the Chicago area?
Mm. Well, I attended private schools. I went to grade school at St. Catherine of Genoa for first grade through eighth grade, and then went to Mendel Catholic High School, which was a college prep high school, for my secondary education. And that was taught by Augustinian priests, and boy, they were tough. Discipline was just a fact of life. It was just, while it was tough, it was probably good for me too, because it kept not only me but my friends focused. I mean, you couldn't goof around.
Did you have to wear uniforms, or?
We had to wear a sport coat and tie.
Well, it must probably have been some interesting combinations.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Some guys, I swear, they wore this same sport coat for 4 years.
Well, okay, regarding your choice of college, was that basically because of friends that maybe matriculated there also, or?
You know, it's sort of unbelievable, but I had a class of 432 in high school, and 11 of us went up to Loras. Well, I only knew of three of us that were actually going up there at the time that I left. And I wanted to, I was really afraid of a major university. I'd been accepted at Northern Illinois as well. And I went to matriculate at Northern Illinois, and frankly, I got scared. And so that helped solidify my choice of Loras. And when I did go to Loras, my roommate for the first 2 years, I had gone to both grade school and high school with him. So we knew one another well. And so, okay. And then, like I say, then there were nine others from my high school that were up there as well.
During those years, how did you get back and forth from home to college and so forth?
Well, we would sometimes hitchhike and sometimes take the train. And I loved taking the train because it was the Burlington, and it had dome cars. And part of the route was along the Mississippi River. So we would, of course, rush right up to the dome car and watch the view. So, and hitchhiking was always an adventure.
Yeah, you know, I remember doing the same thing back in those years at Loris. And you're right, it was sort of an adventure, and you didn't think about any negative aspects of the hitchhiking at that point.
No. I took a friend of mine who had never been to Chicago home with me one holiday, and we hitchhiked in, and when we were picked up by a car with three other guys in it, and I got into the back seat with a person I wasn't quite sure if it was a man or a woman. And when we stopped at a rest area, the person went into the men's restroom, so that's how I found out. And then they dropped us off at State and Congress. And I called my dad and said we were going to take the L home to the nearest station and to my house, and my dad was going to pick us up. Well, we got on the train, and there were a bunch of guys literally ripping up the seats with knives. And it was so crowded, my friend and I could not sit together, so we're sitting separately, and I'm next to a guy who's passed out. And he said, how did your team do? And I said, I don't know, I'm not with these guys. He asked me a second time, how'd your team do? I said, I don't know. He asked me a third time, I said, we won by 2 points in overtime. And he goes, oh, that's so nice. And then when we went to get off the train, though, one of the fellows came up behind us and said, we had suitcases with us and everything, but a guy came up behind us and said, you know you're lucky to be getting off. And I said, yes, I do, and we certainly appreciate your letting us alone. Well, we stepped off onto the platform, and there was a group hanging out at the end of the platform. They saw our suitcases and started coming for us. And I said to my friend, run. And we ran down the stairs. And just as we got to the bottom, my dad pulled up, and we jumped in the car, and I said, take off. And so that's the last time I hitchhiked to Chicago.
Well, okay. You were in Dubuque at Loris College, mid-60s. Eventually deciding on majors and what to do with yourself. How'd that work?
That's right. I was a history major, and you know it's pretty tough to get a history job. But I knew that I was going to be a teacher. I've been highly influenced by an aunt of mine who was a teacher, and so I had decided to go to minor in education. And I came out of as I was graduating. I came home from classes one day, and Father Urban Churchill from St. Joe's Parish in Farley, Iowa, was waiting at my door. And we talked a bit, and he offered me a social studies job at the high school at Farley.
Where did you do your practice teaching?
I did my practice teaching at Nativity Grade School in an eighth grade classroom in U.S. history. And Nativity is used to be a larger parish in Dubuque itself.
What are your you have some favorite memories of some of your professors at Loris?
Well, my all-time favorite professor was Dr. Jim White, and he really knew his stuff, and I think I learned more history sitting having a cup of coffee with him than I probably did in class. And he had some interesting wartime experiences, and it was always interesting to hear what he had to say about World War II. My dad was also a veteran, so I, of course, had heard about the war from my father, but it was interesting to hear Dr. White's experiences as well.
I remember him vividly also, and I remember one of his features was when he lectured, he closed his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you recall?
He had trifocal glasses, and I don't know if he ever really adapted to them. And he would blink his eyes frequently, and,
yeah.
And I think it was just changing from one lens to the other, but it was a noticeable feature of his.
Any other professors that... Yes,
I enjoyed Father Carl Schrader, who I took for Shakespeare, and he had gone to Oxford and made sure that you knew about it. And he was really quite knowledgeable about Shakespeare, and it really developed in me an appreciation for not only Shakespeare, but plays in general.
The year you graduated was
1968.
68?
Yes.
You had a job lined up?
Yes. Father Churchill offered me the job at Farley St. Joe's, and by that time I was married.
Did you get married?
I married a woman named Judy O'Brien, who attended Clark College, which is adjacent to Loras, and we married. And we got married in January of 68, right during semester break.
Okay. And so you wound up, remember your first trip into Farley? What were your memories?
Oh, I drove out there on a Sunday to meet with Sister Angela Feeney, and she was giving me my assignments and my books and so forth. And anyway, the phone rings, and it's my wife saying that I better come home because her water had burst. We were expecting a baby, and it turned out to be time. So I had to jump in the car and speed back to Dubuque and pick up my wife and take her to the hospital.
Fortunate that she knew the phone number to call.
That's right.
Now you had a child, and you had to find a place to live.
We found a little house in Farley that we wound up living in for 6 years, and paid $85 a month rent. Never went up on us. And it was really quite comfortable, and it was within walking distance of Farley St. Joe's. And so really it was a good place to start a family.
So your first year at Farley, and
I taught at Farley for 2 years, and then the position at Western Dubuque became available, and I called Wayne Drexler and one morning, and pretty much asked him if any positions were available, and he told me about a shared time program they were starting over at Court and Camp Hall, and wanted to know if I would be interested in either an English position or a reading position. And I said, well, reading sounds good.
So that was probably May of that spring.
That would have been in the spring of 1970.
Yeah, and that was an interesting time, because that was the initiation of the shared time program with the Beckman system over in Dyersville. And as luck would have it, I guess at that point, there was a building that was available for the middle school students from Beckman. How did that operate?
Well, we got the kids in two different shifts. So what would happen is in the early morning, they would be bussed over from Beckman, and we had the morning classes. And they had three classes, reading, English, and mathematics. And then those kids were bussed back to Beckman. And then about an hour later, we received the afternoon students, and again the same three courses were taught to the afternoon students. So
you know, as far as an ideal setup for a teacher, I don't know how it could have been anything better than
well, it was really pretty nice that there were no lunchroom supervision duties. There was, you know, there really were none of the things that that the public schools had to endure in terms of supervision, such as playground supervision or study hall supervision. Those were non-existent at Courtney
Camp.
Well,
how about the meals we had?
Well, the meals were actually super. There was we were adjacent to another Catholic school where a lot of the kids had gone to grade school in Dyersville, and they had a cafeteria underneath the Basilica in Dyersville. And boy, the cooks there and the food there were just great. And so we were able to eat at the cafeteria, and it was better than eating at home.
Oh, I just remember those ladies, and they had special days, you know, where they had particular stuff they made for us. And
Thanksgiving, for example.
It was embarrassing.
Thanksgiving was like Thanksgiving at home, like I said a moment ago. Turkey and all the trimmings.
How about some of your colleagues that you worked with at that time?
It was an interesting assortment of people. My first year, my two seventh grade colleagues, teaching seventh grade students, were two ladies. One of them a Dyersville native who eventually married and gave up teaching, and another one was a jolly soul who taught mathematics. I think she really mathematics, but she wasn't really great at classroom discipline, and unfortunately for her, she only lasted for a year, but she was fun. And then so the following year I got a new set of colleagues, and this time it was two other fellows, and one of the guys was named Bill Giorgio. And Bill was an outstanding mathematics teacher. I mean, he might have been one out of a 41-year career. I don't know if I ever saw a better mathematics teacher.
Brilliant.
He was. And then the other turned out to be a longtime good friend of mine named Lloyd Peters. And Lloyd taught English. And he was, you know, a real popular teacher with the kids, and among the three of us, we had a harmony and a way of dealing with the kids. So it was very, very pleasant for, I believe, the kids and for the three of us.
Who else do you remember from that?
Well, then we also had an eighth grade, and they were on a separate floor from us, and the one that stands out the most in my memory there was a college classmate of mine named Bill Phillips. And Bill also became a very good friend over the course of years. And unfortunately, Bill passed away a number of years ago. But he had not only gone to college with me, but then went overseas, went over to Vietnam. And so when he came back, he had numerous war stories, literally, to share with us.
Bill, as I recall, unfortunately had no filter.
Bill.
Verbal commentary.
Bill sometimes didn't think before he spoke, which was unfortunate. We had one incident that comes to mind. The kids were milling around in front of the school building and the basilica, waiting for the buses to pick them up to take them back to Beckman at lunchtime. And the kids were horsing around a bit. It wasn't bad, but anyway, we were all out there because the buses were late. And so just trying to keep the kids on the sidewalk and, you know, hijinks at a minimum. And Bill stood on the steps of the Basilica, which is consecrated ground, and swore at the kids, and actually trying to get them back under control. And be that as it may, the buses finally showed up, and the kids were loaded, and that was the end of the
matter. We heard nothing more of it.
Right.
So, the amount of time a number of years you were there at that position.
I was there for 4 years. I started in 70, and during the course of my teaching at Corton Camp for Western Dubuque, I was also working on my administrative certification at the University of Iowa. And I received that certification and then began searching for my first administrative job. So that came along in 1974, and I left Western Dubuque and went to South Tama.
Okay, so you had interviewed for several positions?
Oh, yeah. I was freshly out of graduate school, and so I put my name out to various places in various states. I interviewed in Minnesota, in Wisconsin, in Iowa, and Illinois. So really, you know, it, in fact, one of the places that I interviewed was in northernmost Minnesota.
I remember
Baudette was the name of it.
Baudette?
Yeah.
Was that when we went to Duluth?
No, that was another one.
Okay.
But in Baudette, it was literally on the Rainy River, which separates the United States from Canada. And when you looked out of the school window, you saw the Canadian flag. That's how close it was to Canada.
Did you get an offer there? Or?
Yes, I was offered that job, but then I no sooner came back home to Iowa, and I was offered the position at South Tama. And so northern Minnesota seemed like a long way away from family and friends, so I decided upon the South Tama position.
Okay, so you moved to South Tama,
mm-hmm.
74, 75.
That's correct.
How'd that go?
South Tama was a tough school district. The beautiful facilities, paid well, a good staff. The kids, they were just a tough lot, and discipline was an issue at South Tama, and as an assistant principal at the high school, that was the main function of my job. So I dealt with the kids in disciplinary matters, and you know, because of that, was able to really form some associations with the kids.
Was that a 9-12 or 10-12?
It was a 10-12 high school. It's now a 9-12.
You remember what the enrollment was? Or?
It was about, at the high school, it was about 850 kids.
That's a pretty good size.
Yeah, it was.
High school at the time. And so your duties, you know, surrounded mainly the disciplinary aspects of
attendance and discipline, yeah.
Which can be a little bit stressful at times. I'm sure it was.
We had a Native American population, and it taught me the difference. I really saw the differences between cultures there. And, for example, attendance was important to me. And the Indian kids lived out on a settlement. And so they were not governed by U.S. laws. So when it snowed, they went hunting. And, you know, hunting wasn't a very acceptable excuse to be absent from school, for me anyway. And what they tried to impress upon me is, well, you don't understand. When it snows, that's when we hunt, and we need to
track them.
We need to, you know, get the deer, because that's what we eat. And so...
hard to argue with that.
So it was, you know, and time, you know, like I would say, school started at 8 o'clock, and an Indian student might show up at 10:30, and I'd say, well, you know, you're late. He said, but I'm here. And I said, yeah, but you're here, you're late, but I'm here. And so the fact that they were present was what mattered to them. But what mattered to me was they were not present in a timely fashion, meeting our expectations.
So were they transported up from the settlement?
Yes and no.
How did that go?
A lot of, you know, we offered buses, but the, you know, when the kids are in high school, it's not as cool to be on the bus as it is to drive. So many of the kids drove.
So they had their own.
Yes, they had their own vehicles.
Okay, so you were at South Tama for
4 years.
For 4 years.
And then I went on to what was the second largest school in the state. I became an assistant principal at Hempstead High School in Dubuque. And, you know, I was familiar with Dubuque because I went to school there. And then, of course, lived in Western Dubuque for 6 years. So... you know, it felt like going to Hempstead and going back to Dubuque felt like going home.
And so, when was that, late 70s?
Well, that would have been 78. Yeah, I started there in 78.
Okay, and you had a good experience at Hempstead?
Oh, yeah, I really enjoyed Hempstead. There was a great principal, a great staff. I don't know that we could have run that big a school any more effectively or efficiently than what we did in those days. And that was due to the leadership of a man named Don Moody, who was a longtime principal there.
Yeah, and he was a legend, basically.
Yeah, he really was.
During that period of time with the Dubuque system. And so you continued in that fashion as an assistant principal for...
Well, while I was at Hempstead, there was a staff reduction, and I was reassigned from Hempstead to Washington Junior High. And Washington was on the corner of the busiest intersection in town, Grandview and Highway 20. And, oh boy, I always worried about the kids because of the traffic and so forth and the busing. And anyway, so then I went over to... After 4 years at Hempstead, I went over to Washington for 6 years.
Okay. And that was, so that was a good, another positive for you as far as...
I knew the principal quite well. We had been friends before we worked together. And so I felt real comfortable in that position because of... working for a man named Art Rowling. And he was, again, a longtime principal at Washington.
Good fellow. In that period of time, is that when you were working on your superintendency application?
Actually, no. I didn't go to school at all at that time. I had not yet begun working on my superintendency. When I was at Washington, I was actually offered a job overseas in the country of Norway, and I was the principal K-12 of the Stavanger American School, which is now the Stavanger International School. And it, again, an interesting experience. We had kids from 23 different countries. Many of the kids were taking courses were taught in English, so many of the kids were taking coursework in their second language. You know, and so a very, 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 very bright student body.
That had to be a cultural.
Oh, sure.
Explosion.
it you know, one of the things you quickly learn not to say is, well, in the States we do it this way. Because the counter response is, well, maybe you should go back to the States then.
Okay.
And, but it was a socialist country. They had elections while I was there. And a woman was elected prime minister. And never was it a factor that she was a woman. That did not enter into the equation of the election. It was... It's a beautiful country and a peaceful country. I'd encourage anybody.
Well, our president to go over seems there. To think a lot about it.
Yeah, he seems to. We had our kids had an average ACT score of 23.
So. You know, you must have kind of been almost like on an island because there were no other schools like back here in the States that. You could connect back and forth with, were there? Or?
No, there really weren't. And so it was, there was a loose affiliation of schools called the International Schools Council. And they had some information that flowed back and forth in and among the schools about what one another was doing. And so... You know, that's the way you kept up on what was happening with your colleagues, so to speak.
So this is funded by...
Oh, it was paid for by some of the oil companies that were there. One of the, well, let's see, it was Phillips Petroleum was probably the biggest one. And then there was a Norwegian company also, and then it was a French. And so what it was is a consortium of these oil companies came together and formed this school, because when they brought personnel over to Norway to work, many of them were married and had families, and of course they had to provide for the children. And so therefore the school was built to accommodate the children of these expat employees.
And what do you think? What do you remember, the enrollment status? Or?
Well, the whole school was probably 300 kids.
Okay. Was there a lot of in and out?
Oh, yeah. The parents were transferred quickly and often. And the president of my student body was a girl who was 18 years old, and she'd lived in 16 countries during her lifetime.
That must have been quite an experience to be able to do that. But you were there for 1 year?
Just 1 year.
One year. And decided then to do what?
Well, I really decided that I wanted to be back in the States. While living in a foreign country is exciting, the excitement does lose its effect in the trials and tribulations of everyday life, because it's so different from what your experiences might have been back here in the States. So I returned to the United States and was offered a position as curriculum director at West Burlington Danville. It was a shared time position between two school districts in southeastern Iowa. Okay. It's by Burlington.
So that was early 90s?
That would have been 1990, yes.
Hmm. So if you went to that experience, that continued until...
I was curriculum director for 2 years, and then while I was doing that, that's when I began working on my superintendency endorsement.
Through Iowa?
Through the University of Iowa. And I was just finishing the coursework related to my superintendency endorsement, and a position opened up nearby in a town called New London. And both of the superintendents that I was working with and for in West Burlington and Danville encouraged me to apply for the New London superintendency, which I did do, and with their support I was hired.
Okay, so that was your first full experience as a superintendent at that point.
Yeah, I was superintendent in New London for 6 years.
Okay.
And while I was there, we passed three different bond referendums, so which we badly needed. And
that's for buildings.
Well, the first one was actually for a swimming pool. We had a swimming pool that was closed, and everybody in town wanted the pool reopened. And
really?
Well, I offered to them, well, there's what is called at that time it was called the playground levy. It was a 13.5-cent levy, and it passed with like 83% of the vote in favor.
Well, that was actually a public outdoor pool.
Well, it was actually an indoor,
that
was attached to the school.
That's incredible.
And in the previous Olympics, a girl that had started her swimming at New London won the silver medal in the Olympics. And I can't remember her name, I'm sorry. And anyway, she came back and for a day, and all the kids got to touch her medal and, toured the pool. And
well, that was a no-brainer.
So it helped.
Use that to impetus to get
that really helped.
How much was it for, do you remember?
Well, like I said, it was 13.5 cents per thousand. And we put together a consortium of the city and the electric company and the gas company and the school district. And so between the city and the school, we're able to reconstitute the pool, and city also supplied the water, so we weren't charged for the water. And then the electric company provided free electricity, and the gas company charged us the minimum for the gas that we needed. Everything just came together.
Were you asked to present that concept anyplace else? I mean, it sounds so unique.
It's there aren't that many schools that have pools, come to think of it, I wasn't.
I mean, that just seems like a brilliant put together of utilities and...
You know, and a lot had to do with the personalities that were involved. You know, people had to be willing to do that.
Sure.
And fortunately, the CEOs of those companies that I was dealing with were sympathetic.
Yeah. Okay. So, moving on. This is in the 90s.
That was from 92 to 97. I was there. And so then I went up to Wisconsin.
You had the urge to move on out of the state.
Well, I wasn't... Well, yeah, the reason I wanted to move on was because I was so displeased with IPRS, which is the retirement system for educators in Iowa. And Wisconsin had a much better, sounder... retirement system. So I began pursuing positions in Wisconsin. And I was hired by Mineral Point, which is an attractive little town halfway between Dubuque, Iowa and Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay, so you moved to Mineral Point.
And, that's correct.
You stayed there for, 9 years, was it?
Yeah, 9 years, yeah. Beautiful area, good school, good staff, good kids. I'd encourage anybody to consider Mineral Point as a good place to live.
So at that point you were established yourself as in the pension system. And felt that at some point you wanted to wrap things up, maybe back in Iowa.
Well, what happened while I was at Mineral Point, IPRS updated its retirement program, and it literally became worthwhile for me to return to Iowa to capitalize on the new expanded program. And after 9 years at Mineral Point, I came back to Iowa and as superintendent at Lisbon, Iowa.
Okay. How many years did you eventually wind up with as far as contributing to IPRS in the Iowa system?
Well, I maxed out with Iowa.
You were 4 years at, I'm just, the West Dubuque and...
No, I was... 4 years at Western Dubuque, and then we'd have to go through it all. But
no, it's what 30 years? Or?
I got 30 years credit.
Yeah,
and so I was able to receive the maximum benefit.
Okay.
From IPRS.
Okay. At that point, you felt it was a career and ready to transition on into retirement.
That's right. I've been a superintendent for 17 years, and I won't, being a superintendent puts a lot of pressure on you as an individual and your family as well. And so I don't regret my years as a superintendent, but it's a it wears on you, and I was ready to retire. I'd been in education for 41 years, and so I was ready to say, well, thank you, and goodbye.
Well, that was, interesting how people move from one stage of their career to the next, mm-hmm. and what things happen in between to determine these interactions. But you know, I think I maybe said this at some point. I remember my positions, and I liked what I was doing. Every day, I look forward to going to the job, mm-hmm. because I knew it was not going to be the same repetition. It was going to be something different.
Well, it's funny because I had the same experience that, you know, in my last job, for example, I had about a half-hour drive to work. And as I was driving along, I would sort of plan my day in my own mind, and rarely did the plan work out. And because there was that was one enjoyable thing about the superintendency is that you meet and greet a lot of people during the course of a day, some expected and some unexpected. And so, you know, there's a lot of interpersonal communication going on, and basically that's an enjoyable part of the job, you know, a lot of those people. And going home, when you would look back on your day, it was often satisfying to think, well, I was able to really help this person or help this situation or, you know, benefit kids in general. And so it was rewarding.
Away from the job, you found time to take up a kind of a life-threatening interest in motorcycling?
Yes. When I was in Wisconsin, I started motorcycling. One of my good friends up there had a motorcycle, and he encouraged me to get one of my own, which I did. And we took a number of trips, and, you know, it's a great way to see the USA. However, you've got to keep your eye on the road, too. And so one day I was driving my motorcycle to work, and this is while I was in my last position at Lisbon, and the kids all thought it was real cool when their superintendent showed up on a motorcycle, you know. So anyway, I'm going to make a left-hand turn at a stoplight, it was a stop sign, and I'm turning left, and I can see a car on my right starting out. He had been stopped, and he was looking to his left. He didn't see me, and I knew I was going to get hit. And so as I saw the car approaching me, I literally hopped off the motorcycle, and he hit the motorcycle, and that sort of encouraged me to give up my motorcycle.
What was his responses there when this happened when he got out of the car?
You know, it's funny. I could see, I was looking right at him when he hit me, and I could see him go, oh, shit. And he stopped, and he got out, and the first thing he said, I'm sorry I didn't see you, which is frequently what you hear exactly. A motorist say.
Yeah, and I'm sure that happens even more now that people are so distracted with their devices, you know.
Exactly.
So during your retirement years, you've traveled?
Yes, we've recently returned from London, and that was on my wife's bucket list, and so we had a very nice visit in London, and we've traveled quite a bit during my retirement. In fact, I've traveled with you to both Florida and Arizona, and also New Mexico, come to think of it. So,
not to mention Mexico.
Oh, Mexico itself, but I wasn't retired then.
Yeah, there were some, you know, some great experiences that we shared over the years. Yeah. Well, that's a pretty good quick call of your career and life, and I want to thank you for taking the time to sit down and make this a part of the archive in West Dubuque.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to do that, Bob, and frankly, Western Dubuque had a great influence on my life, and when I look back at the people that I worked with and the administrators that I served under, I couldn't have had a better experience than what I did at Western Dubuque.
Thanks, sir.
You're welcome.